This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Andre, we bought a new, I say that in air quotes, truck.
It's new to us.
It is new to us.
Yes.
It's a very interesting truck. And in this podcast, we're going to be talking about what we bought. You'll be the first to know.
Yes.
And then how we bought it. And then more importantly, I think for all of you truck people out there, I've always wondered, Andre, why are trucks considered like half ton or three quarter ton?
Or one tons.
Or one tons. And this truck illustrates that. So let's get right into it.
Yes. And also we can talk about some other trucks we've been testing, right, this week and last week. Because we've had a lot going on here at TFL Truck. So it's a good time to talk about all those things.
Yeah, we kind of compared how the new Ram tows just across town compared to the Cybertruck. And that's also a very interesting distinction, and we'll talk about that. So if you're wondering like how a Cybertruck tows as opposed to a traditional, in this case,
half ton,
straight six,
yes,
twin turbo,
yeah, Hurricane.
Hurricane. We'll let you know. So let me tell you the story about how we bought this new truck and why we bought it.
So first of all, what year are we talking about?
Well, I'm not going to tell you that yet.
2024?
No.
Okay.
Well, if you're watching this, you'll see it behind us. The year is pretty evident. But if you're listening to this, you won't know until I tell you.
Okay.
So Tommy and I and Case went to the premier, and this is going to give you a hint, Model A Parts Center in America, I guess. It's called Burt's Ford. I don't know the exact name, but it's in Denver. Burt's Ford Model A Parts or Motor Parts or something like that.
Ford Model A. Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And,
okay.
And we went there because not only do they sell everything to do with Model A's, but they also sell vehicles on consignment. And it's a really cool old school shop. I mean, it's really chill. It's been there for like 40 years. And it's the kind of place that no longer exists in much of America where you can just walk in and there's, you know, stacks of old books. And then you go in the back, and we walked in and we're like, hey, we're here to check out some vehicles that you're selling, and they were like, no problem, just going back, say hi to Dan, and then check it out. So in the back, where the warehouse is, they've just got stacks and stacks of Model A parts. And Dan...
Like floor to ceiling?
Floor to ceiling, yeah. Yeah, and they just walk in. You know how you go to like a dealership, and you have to ring the bell, and then some grumpy guy comes out.
He's like, what do you want?
Yeah, what do you want? Are they going to look it up in the computer? None of that. They just go in the back, say hi to Dan. Nobody, you know... And that was so sweet, just really old school. And Dan was a sweet, sweet man. And he actually...
Dan was the man.
He actually rebuilds Model A engines.
Okay.
Now, this was before the flathead V8. So these are four-cylinder engines that were in the initial Model A. And did you know that you could buy a Chinese-made Model A engine?
No.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Brand new, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Everything is built in China.
Apparently.
Pretty much.
Yeah, they have classic. He also rebuilds them. And he uses things like Stromberg carburetors, and there's all the like all the parts I don't know. But just like today, if you know you're doing, let's say an LS swap, right? And you know what parts to get back in the day when the Model A was around, they had the same thing. So there were ways to hot rod them, and and I don't know these ways, but Dan knew them, and so he went into this long discussion about how you hot rod a Model A engine, and then they had like T-buckets with Model A engines that could do 80 miles an hour, which is pretty crazy because a Model A could maybe do 55,
yes,
maybe 60, you know. But there were a bunch of Model A's on consignment. Sedans, so they made them, I think there were like 15 different configurations, right? Four-door sedans, two-door coupes, two-door coupes with rumble seats, and it was like gray, black, gray, black, black, gray, and then red.
Hey, podcast listeners and TFL Talk viewers. I wanted to take a minute to talk to you about a quick and simple way to sell your car or truck with the help of our new partner, HiRoad. With HiRoad's online portal, you enter your vehicle's VIN number or plate, mileage, and zip code, And you'll get competing offers from several qualified dealers in your area within seconds. You pick the best deal offered and follow through with the dealer to sell your vehicle. No more managing scammy emails from buyers on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace. No more time wasted on no-show buyers. No bait and switch with a "will you take a check" excuse from sketchy buyers. Now keep in mind, these offers will be for trade-in values of your vehicle. If you want to go through the hassle of getting more for your vehicle, that's up to you. But if you want to sell your vehicle hassle-free and fast, go to tfltruck.com and click Sell Your Truck in the navigation menu. Or click on the High Road ad at the bottom of the website if you're on mobile, or click on the column if you're on a desktop. High Road makes it easy, and we like easy.
So, a bright color.
TFL color.
Yes.
Not just red, but red and black.
Red and black. And if you can see the studio, maybe you can. Yeah, but yeah. Red and black is our colors.
Yes. Yeah. So immediately I was like,
Yeah.
Wow, this is interesting. And this vehicle that was parked there was pristine. I mean, it had been completely renovated from nut to bolt. Everything on it looks like it's ready for Pebble Beach. And by the way, if you're a Pebble Beach fan...
Maybe we're not.
Maybe stop with the Duesenbergs. Start with the Model A's. Yeah. I mean, come on. This is America's premier automotive show, and yet American cars rarely win. So you think the snooty people like at Pebble Beach would be like, what the hell is that thing if a Model A came trucking into?
Dude, I think this vehicle is gorgeous.
All right, so tell them, it's what, we gorgeous. Tell them what we bought.
It's a 1931 Ford Model A pickup, halftime.
Yeah, of course, it's a halftime pickup.
It's a pickup.
It's a pickup. And the problem with the Model A pickups is they're halftimes. We'll talk about that in a second. But the bed is teeny tiny, right?
It's like 3 feet wide,
yeah,
by 4 feet, maybe 4.5 feet.
Yeah, exactly. And because it's got a bed, the cab is also tiny. So Andre and I will fit, but...
but we'll be... We'll be hitting shoulders.
We'll be close. And then it's one of those cars or trucks that when you steer it, because the steering wheel is so close into your gut, you steer it with your hands on top of the steering wheel because that's the only place you could put your hands, because otherwise, you know, you couldn't sit far back enough in the vehicle to actually put your hands anywhere else but the top of the steering wheel, unless you have extremely short hands and arms. So I just fell in love with this thing because, you know, it was beautiful. And it was affordable. It was $21,000.
No way. When you brought it back,
yeah,
and I got back because we were filming another video that day, and I saw it, and I was like, this must be expensive. I mean, it looks so nice. The paint is new, or at least it looks new. All the chrome was done right, the glass, everything. I thought, wow, Roman spent a bunch of money.
I didn't.
$21,000.
And then Tommy, who recently got married... had his wedding party in our barn at the ranch.
Yes.
And he used the pickup as a holder for his charcuterie board. So we spent $21,000 for a charcuterie board.
I have a picture of that. Holder. Should we include it in the video?
Yeah, give it to Cole. Okay. We'll edit it into it.
Okay.
But yeah, it was... And then the owner of the place, Steve, I think his name's Steve, yeah. I think it'd be Bert, wouldn't you? It's Bert.
Well, if it's Bert's Model A.
Maybe it's Steve Bert.
Okay.
Anyway, he's like, I'll give you a ride in it. So Tommy gets in the thing, and Steve gives him a ride. And the second I saw it on the road, this was like movie car written all over it. You know what I mean? And let's face it, Andre, while we're journalists, we're also in the video business. And so anything that, you know, pops on camera is something that we're... This thing pops, yeah. This thing really pops. It's just...
And I'm not usually a chrome person, but because the grill of this pickup truck is so intricate... I mean, it's very thin, so it's not like overbearing, and it just looks amazing.
And then, you know, we kind of did a video series over at Classics featuring the Model T.
Mm-hmm.
You may have seen the one where they took it to the Ford dealership and tried to get it serviced. If you had, that's a really fun one to watch. That one actually went viral, so 3.7 million views. So I was super excited to tell the rest of the story because, as I'm sure you guys know, and I'm sure you know, Andre, you know, Henry Ford built the Model T, and he thought that was the perfect vehicle, and he did not want to build anything else.
Well, also there's some history because why was it T? you know, because it was the alphabet that he was going through.
I think
through,
it was
right?
the second time that he went through the alphabet.
So like he went so he had a few trials and errors.
Yeah, he went from like A to Z, and then he went back to A and then back to T. And so he's like, this is perfect.
Yes.
But unfortunately, when it went out of production, I want to say that was 1926 or 27, if I recall.
I know more about new trucks than old trucks.
Hold on. I don't want to get these numbers wrong, so I'll look it up. It was way out of date, and it wasn't until his son convinced him that they needed to, like...
Well, I can kind of see. So when Henry Ford, you know, was working on this, and Model T, you know, he actually, you know, introduced the assembly line concept, actually getting the car built cheaply.
I got it right. 1908 to 27.
Okay. And so that was the Model T run.
That was the Model T, and they built millions of them.
Yeah.
And in 1908, when you built the car... and you thought about how do we operate the vehicle, what do you think came to mind? What other mechanical
vehicles? Well, usually like steam engines.
Tractors. And so the way you operate the Model T is like you would operate a tractor. It has literally nothing to do with the way a modern car drives or steers or brakes.
As far as pedals or shifting or anything like that.
Yeah, even though it's got pedals, none of them do what you think they do. And it's got, I'll give you an example. One of the pedals you think is a brake. It's not. The lever next to you is the brake. So you know, by like the mid-20s or even earlier, I think Chevy was the first company that introduced.
Wasn't it Cadillac or something?
Cadillac
are you
introduced
talking about
the electric start.
Original controls?
Yeah, Cadillac introduced the electric start. But I want to say Chevy introduced the way that you shift and steer a vehicle.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
And so, you know, by 1927, driving a tractor was, you know, pretty hard. Yet the Model T at that point, after they had built, I think even 10, like 30 million or something, they built a lot of them. People still bought them, but that's because they were cheap. They were like $400, which would be like $400 in today's money. It was like that cheap. But finally, you know, Ford's son convinced him that it was time to move on. By that point, Henry Ford was kind of already going a little bit of crazy, right?
But there's also pressure, right? There's competition that was growing. So there's other American makes, like you're saying, and there are other European makes that were kind of entering the car world in a big, huge way. Of course, Mercedes started, you know,
way
before that.
Yeah.
1800s, so there was some pressure, right? There was some pressure here.
Well, yeah, Ford was losing market share because people wanted convenience. And they wanted things like, you know, like brakes that worked,
yes,
as opposed to brakes that used cotton, which is what the Model T did. So the Model A comes out, and basically, if you know how to drive a modern car with a stick shift, you could probably drive the Model A. The biggest difference is it doesn't have synchros, so you got to kind of, you know, double clutch. You know what double clutch is?
Double clutch everything.
Yeah. So modern day synchros work in such a way that there's a It's a mechanism in the transmission that basically matches the gear that you're putting it into with the engine revolutions so that you never grind the gears.
Yes.
But with the Model A, you have to double clutch. So what that means is you push in the clutch, the go of the clutch, you blip the throttle to match the speed of the vehicle to the speed of the engine, and then you put it into gear. If you don't do that, it'll go, right? You'll feel the gears. But if you once you you know kind of learn how to do that, it becomes instinctual, and it becomes relatively easy to drive.
Basically, now, your left leg is doing a lot of exercising. A
lot of exercising, yeah. Now, our truck version is a 1931. So the difference, which is fascinating, the difference in 4 months from 1927 when the Model T went out to when the Model A came out is like night and day. All of a sudden, you go from this tractor-like vehicle with, you know, a crank start to a relatively modern vehicle that almost anybody could drive. We drove it actually back from Denver, which is, you know, to here it's like 30 miles, and it does kind of downhill with the wind. It does like 65 miles an hour And that's because it's got an overdrive, so it's got a three-speed, but then there's also this lever you can pull up, which is an overdrive, which is great. And then the guy who had it before us actually retrofitted turn signals because it didn't have turn signals. Model T's also had a truck called the TT.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at one of those because, you know, we have a very popular truck channel. The problem with the TT is it's basically a worm gear, and so they maybe go like 30 miles an hour, which is very tractor-like.
Very agricultural truck, basically.
Yeah, yeah. So you can't really, use it for a lot of video production unless you're at the ranch, and you really can't drive it very far. But this you could drive like a regular vehicle, like I said, and it's got, you know, modern conveniences like air conditioning. No, I'm kidding. It's got a window that falls up.
It's 93 years old.
The front window falls up so you can get airflow into the cab. But it does have disc brakes. It does have an OOGA horn. And get this, Andre.
OOGA!
It's got an electric starter.
Yeah, so you just, is there a button or do you turn the key?
Yeah, so there's still some kind of old-fashioned thing. So there's a key that you turn.
Okay.
Then like a motorcycle, there's a little dial that you turn, which is a spigot to allow the gas to go into the carburetor, right? So you have a gas shut off. And then you have a little retard switch, ignition retard switch on the steering wheel. So you can still retard the ignition.
So kind of like a Model T.
Kind of like a Model T. But then that also serves as cruise control. So you can set the speed of the engine using
that.
It has, I know. I didn't want to go there, sorry.
Are you saying a 93-year-old truck has cruise
control? It
does,
yeah, exactly.
Jeez.
And yours doesn't, I know.
Okay.
And then, you know, wire wheels as opposed to wooden wheels, and headlights that actually work, and taillights that kind of work. The wiper is vacuum. You can see it in the picture, but I couldn't get it to work.
There's a single wiper, basically, for the driver.
That's vacuum actuated. In other words, the vacuum of the engine. So the faster the engine turns, the faster the wiper goes, but ours doesn't work, and I'm not too stressed.
And there's side mirrors. It's a fully legal vehicle. I mean, you can drive it on a highway, road, any road right now.
Yes, yes. And then it tows 5,000. No, I'm kidding. It doesn't tow anything.
So here's my issue with it.
All right.
I came up to it. I was blown away by the beauty of this vehicle. And I looked in the back, and there is no hitch. Mm-hmm. What kind of a truck, explain this to me, has no hitch?
A Model A 1931 has no hitch. I don't think towing was a thing until later with basically Model A's, right? There were commercial trucks. Let's talk about that.
Well, there's double A's.
Yeah,
double A's. Which are bigger vehicles.
Yeah, like truck that they were used to move hay or, you know.
Move milk or big
brewery,
things.
Right, big things. So let's talk about what a half ton, a three-quarter ton, and a one ton meant when the Model A was new.
So, and this is, we bought a
half ton. We bought a half ton. And what does that mean?
So that meant actual weight.
So you could
weight that it could carry.
So you could put 500 pounds into it.
No, half ton is
250 pounds. No. I'm sorry.
A metric ton, Roman, is just over 2,000 pounds.
So you could put 1,000 pounds.
So you could put 1,000 pounds of stuff into the bed. And that's how the term half ton was born.
You'd have to stack it up very high because
the bed is not very big.
No.
So if you're carrying lead, something very dense. Anyways, but you could also carry two people in this. Driver and a passenger.
It's got leaf springs, but they're they go across the body as opposed to with the body.
Oh, they're perpendicular.
Right. So instead of the modern leaf spring is
parallel to the frame. Yeah.
And then you've got two of them. This one has one that goes, across the body, basically.
So that's kind of what it meant. So when you're, buying a pickup truck for work or your business, your small business, whatever, your large business, you said, I need to carry this much weight from here to there. And the manufacturer said, this truck is rated for half a ton, literally half a ton, 1,000 pounds approximately, and you could carry it safely. The vehicle was designed for that.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Bam.
All right. And then, so how about a one-ton truck or a three-quarter-ton truck?
Same thing.
So
a little bit more weight. Three-quarter-ton would be, 1,500 pounds, and then ton would be 2,000 pounds. And then there's later, there's deuce and a half. That meant two and a half times ton, so.
So that all kind of went out the window today, but that terminology still stuck around. And before we kind of talk about modern trucks, we got a really interesting email, and we should actually read that email about why the Tacoma's payload, is different from the stated payload. You remember that email?
Because you
replied to it.
Yeah, yeah. We'll talk about that. But before,
by the way, thank you for sending us emails.
Yes.
And also, you could check us out at patreon.com/TFLcar is our only Patreon page. You can donate a little bit of money. We always appreciate that. It helps us run this podcast and other things. But also, that's you can be a free member as well. You can send us some feedback and questions there. You can also see our early videos there. So, I don't remember the name of this gentleman who emailed us, but they basically said he's looking to buy a Tacoma Trail Hunter, which is a brand new truck that's coming to the market as we speak. And they said they looked online on the Toyota page, and it said that a Trail Hunter Tacoma, which is a hybrid, which is a hybrid, has 1,425 pounds approximately of payload. And like, great.
Wait. So
1,425.
So it has a little more payload than a 1931 Model A pickup.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. Well, we'll get we'll talk a little more detail. Yeah. But then they saw a Trail Hunter in real life, I think at the dealership, and it showed 1,091.
I don't think Trail Hunters are out yet, are they?
I think they're hitting the dealers are they? Now.
Yeah. You sure about that?
Well, maybe they saw one. Okay. Anyway, they saw one, yeah. Right? And I believe, I mean, they're shipping Tacoma hybrids, I think, as we speak.
Okay.
And there's a big discrepancy there, right? Yeah. 1425 to 1091, which is basically almost 350 pounds, right, of difference. And they're like, why? Why am I seeing a different number online on the advertisement page versus real life?
Why are you seeing a different number online versus the...
Well, first of all, the number online was for a 5-foot bed. So the Trail Hunter comes in the two configurations, crew cab with a 5-foot bed and the crew cab with a 6-foot bed. I believe what they saw in real life was a 6-foot bed one, which is a little bit longer and heavier. So the heavier the truck is, the less payload it will have, right?
Because that's taking your payload. The more that little compressor that's on the Trail Hunter.
It weighs a little bit.
And that whatever it weighs, 30 pounds, that takes away 30 pounds of your payload.
Yes.
So if anything is stuck on the truck.
Like additional steps.
Or roof power rack. Windows. You know?
No, it's not power windows.
Well, but it is creature
power
comforts.
Windows are up bar standard.
But it is.
Power windows are standard.
So you're saying power windows don't count for payload?
Yeah, but it's built into that number that's advertised. So the number that's advertised, 1425 or whatever.
Wait, hold on. We need to talk about this because now I'm confused.
What?
So I've always thought that the more features a vehicle has, the less payload it has.
Exactly, yes.
So right. I was being facetious with power windows, but there's how about heated seats? Those are, you know, those take weight.
Yes.
Or how about...
But when a manufacturer advertises a truck, Trail Hunter, right?
Right.
When you click that button, I want to configure a Trail Hunter, it has standard equipment that it comes always with.
Okay.
That includes the hybrid powertrain, the motor, the battery, all the creature comforts. It costs, dude, $63,000 to begin with. Then, after you click it, you could add more things. You can add a tonneau cover. You can add a roof rack. You can get additional lights. You can get a compressor, like you said. So, after the fact, you can add more accessories to it. But heated seats and ventilated seats and power windows, it's already included in that number.
All right, but let's back up a little bit. And before I do that, show him your T-shirt. This is we have a new bunch of new designs over at TFLstuff.com. So if you want one of like Diesel is Better Than Gas that Andre's wearing, any color you want, head on over there, check it out. We have Gavin, who's now become the Patreon czar, by the way. So he is doing behind-the-scenes videos of what's going on here at TFL and posting them to Patreon. So
Patreon czar.
That's another way. And then the other thing we're starting on Patreon is we're also going to be uploading our videos without commercials before we actually publish them on YouTube. So if you want to see them early and without commercials, head on over to patreon.com/TFLcar, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, so let me take a step back. Let's talk about full-size trucks or half-tons.
Okay.
All right? You've got
like
a work...
Like a F-150.
Yeah, okay. You've got the work truck F-150.
Uh-huh.
And then you move up to the XLT. Yeah. And then you move up to like a Lariat. And then you move up to like a Platinum, right? Every one of those trucks, as you move up, has less and less payload.
Exactly, yeah.
Because you're putting more and more luxury features. That's why I was asking about the Trail Hunter. If you add seats, heated seats, then you lose payload. But I'm saying you can see that more readily in like a half ton, where there are so many different trim levels. And the more like the Lariat may have heated seats, but the XLT doesn't,
right?
Maybe. And the Lariat will have less payload than the XLT because it has those heated seats, right? Am I right about that?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay, good.
But Toyota and other manufacturers often break out payload ratings per trim. So if you bought a Tacoma base Tacoma SR, that has like 1,800 pounds of payload, and it's stated on the website. But when you're buying a Trail Hunter, that 1,800 pounds becomes 1,400 pounds, right?
Yep.
So that's where that difference comes from. And by the way,
Shane is tearing apart our Cybertruck.
If you could hear some noise, that means our Cybertruck is coming up. Why is our Cybertruck coming apart?
I didn't think it would be that loud. I feel like he's bashing at it with a...
No, he's removing plastic fenders.
Is he?
Yeah.
Because we're wrapping it. And if you become a Patreon, you'll actually see the design we chose and why we're wrapping it. So that's another reason to become a Patreon.
I thought we said we didn't want to wrap it.
We didn't want
to... I mean, originally we were thinking this.
Yeah, we didn't... Originally we wanted not to wrap it because we had, wanted to see how well the stainless steel holds up over a year. But then I kind of felt like we had done everything there is to do with the truck. We have towed long, towed short. We even took it to a tractor pull.
Yeah, we did.
And so there was only one logical thing left to do.
Is to jump it.
Yeah, well, that's somebody else is doing. We'll let somebody else do that. I think Top Gear actually jumped it. No, that was to actually wrap it. And we have a good reason to wrap it. But if you go to Patreon, you'll see the behind-the-scenes video, and you'll know why we're wrapping it. So I hate teasing.
So it's happening
stuff
right now as we're recording.
Yes, right now the truck is being dismantled.
On purpose. It's not just falling apart. It's being dismantled on purpose.
Yeah, and if people think that wrapping something is just easy, you just kind of stick like a giant sticker
some on stickers
it
on.
It's not. You got to take door cards off. You got to take trim off. It's a big to do.
And our friend Shane from Innovation Installations is working on it. We've worked with him for years.
Yes.
And his attention to detail is so precise. And that's, he's a friend of ours.
He's a friend of ours and he does great work. And he's kind of one of those guys that you got to be in the know.
So
to get him.
There's another thing. There's another undercurrent in this payload discussion.
What's that, Andre?
Is that manufacturers can modify their suspension systems on different trim levels of the same truck and increase gross vehicle weight rating. Okay? So
how do they do that?
A base Tacoma may have a gross vehicle weight rating of about 6,000 pounds, and the truck weighs about 4,300 pounds. So that's how you get 6,000 minus 4,300 is about 1,700-pound payload. But
by the way, you just did something important. Why don't you explain to him what that math that you did was? Because you could do it yourself. You can go and look at the sticker on a truck, and you could figure it out yourself. So explain that.
So usually when you open the driver door,
yes,
right, there's two stickers at least there, maybe more. There's a silver sticker that kind of says the VIN and also the date of, month of manufacture. And also it says GVWR, gross vehicle weight rating. That's basically the maximum weight of that vehicle with everything in it, including the trailer on the hitch, including all your stuff, all your people. That's the number, GVWR. And then the yellow and white sticker has your payload number. So if you take the gross vehicle weight number minus the payload,
yes,
it's basically the weight of the curb weight of your vehicle with a full tank of fuel.
Okay.
That's important because fuel weighs quite a bit also.
Yes.
So if you have a large...
Or diesel are heavy, yeah.
Or diesel. If you have a large tank, like a 35-gallon tank, that could be 300 pounds.
I want to say Ford's large tank is 36 gallons, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
In the F-150.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the calculation you can do. So why is that important? Well, don't overload your truck, basically, right? Try to stay within those limits because as soon as you overload your truck, as we found out many times, the suspension squats all the way. The vehicle becomes a little bit more unstable. It just changes the behavior of the truck.
Yeah, so that's another good question that we really don't know a good answer to, but we can kind of talk about it before we move on to the other topic, and that is what happens when you overload your truck. And it's easy to do. I'll give you a good example of that. perhaps the least payload I've ever seen on a truck is the Gladiator with the diesel.
Oh, yes.
Because diesel engines are, you know, they're heavy, right? Because the combustion takes
and
place.
And also the emissions systems on that engine are heavy.
Yeah, because the block has to be thick because the combustion takes place without a spark. It's based on pressure. And I believe that that Gladiator with the diesel had a payload of just over 900 pounds.
Yeah, which is basically you, me, plus two other guys.
Well, you, me, and Nathan are close to it, and throw blazing, and you're a payload.
Yeah.
And then why that's important is because there's still a whole bed sitting up back that's empty.
And a hitch also.
And a hitch, yeah. Yeah. And so when you tow, you're also putting weight on the truck, and usually it's, what, 10%? If you set it up right, you're putting 10% of whatever the trailer weighs. So let's say that truck can tow 6,000 pounds, which I think it can.
Yeah.
And if you set up the trailer right, you're going to be putting 600 pounds of weight
on the hitch.
On the hitch, which goes into your payload number. So now you've got payload of 900, and it's
minus 600.
So that's 300 pounds of payload. So
if
me and you get in it, we're over payload.
Yeah. So it's very easy to do.
Yeah.
And it can be dangerous, like I said, when the suspension is all the way compressed. It may sway a little bit more as you're entering a highway, you know, turn at higher speed. So that's why it's important. But the hybrid system on the Tacoma weighs quite a bit, right? The battery weighs, you know, at least a couple hundred pounds, maybe more. The electric motor, all the extra wiring, the cooling circuits. And so in order to give people a little bit more payload, Toyota and other manufacturers, they actually put heavier springs on it, right? And they increase the gross vehicle weight rating up higher, up to about, what, I think 6,700 pounds on the Trail Hunter. And that's kind of what gives you that additional payload.
So let's take another side street here and talk about kind of the buzz on all the forums now. And we've been talking about Toyota a lot, so let's stay with Toyota. And that is, of course, the two issues that Toyota is having with their trucks. Toyota has a voluntary recall for 100,000 Tundras and some Lexus GXs because the engine block, when it was manufactured, was done in such a way that it left debris in the engine block, which is sealing up some of the oiling ports, which is causing the engine.
And damaging some bearings basically, bearings.
Which can cause the engine, at worst, to fail. And then there are now reports out that people are having issues with the manual transmission in the Tacoma, and there's some automatics, but it's mainly manuals, in that the manual either is rough to shift or will not shift at all. So I want to talk about that because I think, you know, Toyota's reputation for reliability and quality are well known. And now if you go to the internet, especially YouTube, and you watch some of the videos, you know, people who are posting videos say the sky is not falling, but what they're saying is the sky is falling, right? That's just a crafty way of saying.
If you say to say it's not falling.
And not mean it's not falling, right? And what happens is there's this giant echo chamber that develops both on the forums and then online and on YouTube, because people who do YouTube videos know that you can make a lot more money, in other words, get a lot more clicks, by taking a molehill and making it into a mountain. I'm not saying this isn't a mountain, but what I will say is that when the V8 that came out originally in the Tundra, it also had
recalls.
It also had a lot of recalls.
Yeah.
And you know, there is a saying, you should never buy a vehicle in its first year of production. Because
there's probably a lot of validity to that.
There's a lot of validity to that. And then you guys may be thinking, well, you guys, us as TFL, we do that all the time. But we do that because that's our job.
We want to be first.
We want to be first. Yeah. And we want to find out, as we did with the Tacoma, if there are any issues so that, you know, you guys know about them. But I just, my initial journalistic reaction is, whenever I see the sky is falling or the sky is not falling, but nudge, nudge, wink, wink, it might be falling. You know, I tend to be very skeptical and cynical of that. What ends up happening is we try to take kind of a balanced approach to those recalls. And then if you read the comments, every comment is like, you guys are paid shills of Toyota. And
why? Why would Toyota pay us to talk about recalls?
That logic is missing from those comments. But let me just state, we don't take any money from manufacturers.
Any manufacturers,
right?
So
that our credibility comes from the fact that we're reviewing trucks, and unlike influencers,
by using our own money to buy these trucks.
Yeah. We buy our own, not only do we not take money, but we spend money, unlike other people who only use press vehicles to actually because then our skin's in the game, to actually come up with, you know, relevant and honest reviews. And unlike influencers, we're not out there trying to promote anything. We're just out there trying to share our honest opinion with what, and that has gotten such
confused.
It's so confused now online, because there's so many people with so many different agendas posting videos. And look, you don't have to take money to want to make a lot of money on YouTube, right? You can do that by going to a dealership and saying, look at all the trucks. The dealership,
they're not selling
or going during COVID, and there's no trucks on the dealership, which means that they, you know, are about to go out of business. I can't tell you how many YouTube videos I've seen where people have predicted the downfall of Nissan, not the Titan, which is going away, but the entire company.
Or also Jeep. Apparently Jeep has been out of business many times.
Yeah. So, you know, whenever I see a thumbnail with like don't or, you know, no.
Dead.
Yeah. Then you know what's happening there is just a lot of, let's call it mole hearing or mountaineering, or that's based on a little bit of truth, but a lot of exaggeration. Having said all that, I mean, this is a serious recall, both on the Tacoma.
Tacoma does not have a recall.
No, I mean, sorry, on the Tundra and potentially on the Tacoma, but we don't know about the Tacoma.
I was just, while we were talking, I pulled up nhtsa.gov, yes, which is basically a way to track recalls and some other issues. The Tacoma, the 2024 new generation, has, I believe, five complaints. And most of them, Roman, have to do with the automatic, I believe, at least here. So, for example, shift to neutral, the transmission doesn't shift, no warning lights. And I think by the time, and by the way, it requires you to submit your VIN. So when you file an official complaint on nhtsa.gov, they ask you a bunch of information, including your VIN, et cetera, and you can put your comments in there. So I'm sure this is being investigated. You know, Toyota knows about this, since these complaints have been filed. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But a lot of these complaints, Roman, and this kind of makes me a little bit upset, of people with 1,200 miles on their trucks or below. This is like very immediate problem for these people.
So I can tell you one of the things that manufacturers hate, because customers hate it, is to recall brand new vehicles. So it happened with the GX, it happened with the Land Cruiser. There was what's called a quality hold on the vehicles. So the vehicles came to port, and then they sat at port. And it happened, all the manufacturers do it. Toyota's not the only one, right?
Oh, Chevy Colorado was, waiting for different checks many months.
Yeah, they park them, and then what they don't want is to sell you the vehicle, and then 1,200 miles later, something takes a kablooey.
You have a problem.
And then nobody else has a kablooey, and then they have to recall it, because it's just the most painful process, right? As a customer, you just feel like you bought a lemon. And so that's why there are those quality holds with the GX and with the Land Cruiser at the port.
And because, Ford and GM.
But they
and
all do it.
Else.
Yeah, it's not just Toyota. It's just that people who are so anxious to get their GX get on the forums and they go, hey, I ordered mine and it's sitting at the port. What the heck? And we get those emails too. So I'm trying to explain that. Now, you know, are there issues with the Tacoma? See, we're trying to keep our, for the most part, we're not doing a story on this yet, because we're trying to keep our powder dry until we know more. And yes, it would be easy to go out and say the sky is falling and everybody who bought a Tacoma needs to go and, you know, sell it immediately.
But if they delivered 35,000 Tacomas and four failed, you know, that's unfortunate, but that's a very small percentage.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And what we do know, for instance, is that this week Tesla announced the Cybertruck recall.
Two more recalls, yes.
Yeah, two. One for the, I think, windshield wiper motor, and one for a piece of trim that could fly off. And ours is doing that. Our trim is coming off of it. We've got other problems.
It hasn't flown off completely, but it's coming off.
But our tan house completely stopped working.
Yeah.
But the interesting part of that isn't necessarily the recall, because obviously that's not something that Tesla wanted to do, especially with a truck that's only been in production for, you know, 1 year, less than a year, right? Is that there are, how many trucks are being recalled?
The very important number is that in the most recent recall, which is just from last week, on the wiper, it says 11,688 vehicles are recalled.
So that means they've sold 11,688 Cybertrucks.
In the last 6 months.
Since it went into production, basically beginning of the year. And that is probably less trucks than Ford sells
in two weeks.
In 2 weeks, yeah. So that kind of gives
you... So there's not... even though you see Cybertrucks out there on the roads, it's still a small number of vehicles.
Yes.
Relatively speaking.
Yes, and then, that's a far cry from the 250,000 that Mr. Musk had said that he was going to build, kind of like, he was going to... In his conferences, he said that he was going to go compete and go head-to-head with Ford in terms of a truck that is going to rival the F-150. Right now, it's not rivaling the Titan.
You know, the Maverick sells 15,000 a month.
Yeah, I know.
And they sold under 12,000 in 6 months.
Yeah.
So, it's a ways to go to rival Ford.
And
there's a ways to go.
And I'm happy about that because the other set of stories out there, and this is something that I want to fact check as well, is initially when the Cybertruck came out, now keep in mind you sign an agreement when you buy a Cybertruck that you won't resell it in a year. Uh-huh. Now, people have done that, and what Tesla has done is they have banned them from buying other Tesla vehicles.
Because you have to use your account to buy so they know your account name.
Which has got to be that's got to be the Darwin Award for Business of the Year. Your best customers, you say to them, all right, you've owned 6 Teslas, you bought a Cybertruck, you flipped it, and now we're not going to allow you to buy 6 more. And that's especially, Darwinian in terms of its stupidity, because apparently there are Model 3s, Model Ys, that are just sitting in lots collecting dust that they can't sell. I hope Mr. Musk enjoys his $56 billion bonus that he got, because I'm not saying Tesla's on the ropes, but I'm just saying that there's probably some major stupidity going on, at least with that policy with Tesla. But let's go back to the Cybertruck and why I like the fact that they sold few. Initially, when the Cybertruck came out and people flipped them, they were going for like $240,000. When they were brand new, right?
Yeah, maybe one went that high.
Yeah, because they were, selling for either $100,000 or $120,000 for the Foundation Series Cybertruck,
yes,
or Cyberbeast, depending on which tree motor one you wanted. And I think, recently they have come down quite a bit, but they're still selling, I think, at $10,000, maybe $20,000 over sticker. And that's good for me and us because our business model basically is based on us buying vehicles, then making videos with them and not hopefully losing a lot of money when we go and sell them. So I'm happy.
Do we want to be banned by Tesla?
Well, it's your account.
You're right. It is my account. So maybe you'll buy the next Tesla, okay?
For you, yeah. I mean, for right now, the plan is to keep it because we do want to, a lot of the comments we get is we just sold our Tacoma and it had, how many, 6,000 miles on it?
Almost 7.
Yeah. Almost 7,000. And people made the comment that we sold it because we thought it was a piece of, we really sold it because we had done every video that we could think of doing.
And we talked about it in our video.
But people didn't. It doesn't matter what we say.
Didn't get that.
Yeah. So then we have to come on here and vent because we're like, no, we didn't sell it because we thought it was bad. In fact, I really liked that truck. We felt that we had not done everything there is to do. And then if you guys are looking for us to do 100,000 mile reviews,
we don't have quite as much money.
Yeah, there's no business model there for us.
So Consumer Reports buys their vehicles,
yes,
right? And I think I believe they keep them for about a year.
Yes.
But they have huge budgets. I mean, we don't have the same business model as they do.
No, they don't go tractor pulling.
No, they don't.
we have to do that to get views.
They're very sensible in their testing.
Yeah, and that's another question that you brought up. Why are we taking a Cybertruck tractor pulling? And the reason, once again, is because that's our business model. I mean, that at some point, that is less testing and more entertainment, right?
Well, there is another good reason for this, because when Elon Musk introduced the Cybertruck, he went tractor pulling.
Yes.
So we had to do it also, because he said this is the best pickup truck since the, sliced bread, and it will do a tractor pull. So we wanted to see for ourselves if he was actually, right.
And then a lot of the comments on that video, and that thing's going to be at 500,000 views, which is amazing.
That's cool.
Is why didn't you bring the Cyberbeast? Why didn't we bring the Cyberbeast, Andre?
Because we don't have one.
Yeah, we don't have one. And I think borrowing one on Turo and taking it to a tractor pull might create some issues.
I know Kyle has one.
Yeah, Kyle has one.
Right? But, you know, they're very busy. We're very busy. It's not like, you know, we can get together at moment's notice.
Yeah, by the way, I was thinking about that. There's going to be another one coming up in Brighton.
Yes.
Yeah. So
actually, near my house.
Near your house. Maybe we can get Kyle to bring a Cyber Beast and go do a tractor pull.
Okay.
Yeah, we might be able to actually swing that. The other comments on there were like, well, obviously wheel speed's important. Why didn't you turn off the traction control? Andrea, why didn't we turn off the traction control on the Cybertruck?
I did.
Because you can't.
I was in Baja mode.
You can't turn it really off. You can't completely disable it.
Right. Right? But in Baja mode, it's the best mode because it allows more wheel spin.
And yeah.
Also in Baja mode, you can shift the balance of power.
From the front to the rear motor?
Yeah, or vice versa. So I did put some rear bias, about 70% to the rear. And because you can see the front coming off the ground, right?
Yeah.
So there was not a lot of action in the front.
I'm going to be a little sarcastic here, but I was reading some of the comments. And, you know, a lot of the comments obviously are trolley comments, so you can't take them too seriously. But I love, like, you know, the comment where it's like, for a bunch of professional journalists, you don't even know how to turn the traction control off. And I'm like, you know what, Andre, you know, there's that big button on the screen, right, that the whole screen says turn traction control off. Why didn't you push that? There's no way to turn the traction control off in a Tesla Cybertruck. So, like, before you start, you know, hitting us up and you know, proving how much smarter you are, what is Shane doing? Is there going to be a Cybertruck out there when we're going to get done with this thing?
I hope so.
He's just bashing the hell out of that thing.
He's angry.
He's angry.
He's a traditional truck owner.
Yes. Maybe he's doing some, like, quality testing and sledgehammering the steel.
It's supposed to be bullet resistant, right?
Right, yeah. I found out how much it costs to replace the glass.
Which glass?
The front glass? Yeah, guess how much?
The largest windscreen put on any pickup truck?
Yes, how much?
$4,000.
No, $1,900.
Oh. Remember we had to replace a front windshield on a Lightning F-150, which is basically almost a standard F-150 glass. That was like $1,700.
But keep in mind, this is more like Gorilla Glass, so it's much tougher than regular glass.
So that could be a good deal, actually.
Yeah, the one thing I do love about that truck is we have a lot of hail here in Colorado, and you never know, right? It just turns cloudy, and next thing you know, like there's golf ball size.
I was actually affected by that.
And tell me what happened.
Nathan was affected by this.
Yeah.
I was out of town. Yeah. My wife calls, sends me a picture. Everything, the whole yard, the whole driveway is white. I'm like, isn't it June?
In summer, yeah.
In the summer. And she's like, yeah, it's hailing. And then she sent me a picture. She's holding a piece of hail in her hand, which is about the size of a quarter. You know, like, I don't know, half an inch.
Golf ball size, yeah.
Almost.
Yeah.
And so, thank goodness, my truck was at the airport, and our vehicles were in the garage. But now our roof got damaged. On the house. So we have an appraiser coming out and insurance, all that stuff. So Nathan's car got hit.
Very badly.
Yeah. His wife's Mini got hit.
And that was unfortunately not inside but outside.
Yeah.
So, apparently, and I don't know, I read this online, so take it with a grain of salt, but there is like levels of hail basically for the roofing industry. So like level one is kind of light hail, and level four is like the hardest hail, the kind that actually can damage your roof. And apparently the Cybertruck is supposed to be resistant up to level four hail. So that makes you feel good, yeah.
And I believe it. I mean, Gorilla Glass. I mean, Jeep also uses Gorilla Glass.
I don't think it's Gorilla Glass, but it's
multi-level, multi-layer
glass, yeah.
Glass, which is kind of supposed to be stronger, and also sound a little bit more sound deadening, right? So it has different effects. Also, why didn't we air down like all the way when we were sled pulling?
First of all, we didn't know you should air down.
Well, it kind of makes sense for traction.
It makes sense. And then, I don't know, it was just such a whirlwind of things that happened. We got there, and we thought we were going to go early.
And practice,
and then nothing happened for a long time, and then all of a sudden, we're like the featured exhibition with the crowd.
Everybody's screaming and clapping and booing.
Yeah, so yeah.
So
they told Andre, they were like, go back to California, old. And Andre's from Colorado, so I thought that was ironic.
And actually, I was born in Russia, but I've been in Colorado for 32 years, so this is my home.
Yes.
Anyways, there's another reason why we didn't air down. Cybertruck doesn't come with a spare. There's no spare tire.
You can buy one, but then it takes so much of your tailgate.
Yeah, you could strap it into the bed.
Yeah.
We were 150 miles away from our base. We didn't want to have tire problems. And we also, I didn't want to embarrass myself, you know, with a flat tire in front of hundreds of people.
Well, I told that to the organizer. I said, you know, we have to drive these trucks back home because everybody else just trailered their trucks.
Yeah, right? Because they're specific tractor pull modified vehicles.
Yeah. They're long wheelbase trucks that are, running on race fuel that put out like 1,000 horsepower. And so,
Or more.
There's not like a rung what you brung category to a tractor full, but they made an exception for us,
yeah,
which was nice.
Yeah.
So thank you, Nicole.
Nicole with National Sled Pullers Association.
Yeah, great people, really great people. Anyway, we should talk to Kyle and see if he'd actually want to go to the Brighton tractor.
Okay.
Pool. Yeah. So let's keep talking about the payload on trucks because yes. The payload on the Cybertruck is pretty amazing.
It's two and a half, it's deuce and a half.
Yeah.
You know those military trucks from 40, 50 years ago?
Yeah.
They're deuce and a halves. So the payload on the Cybertruck is 2,500 pounds, which is actually more than our Cummins.
Right.
Our Cummins has less than that. It was born with about 2,200-pound payload, and then we decreased it by adding a gooseneck hitch to it, adding suspension, tires, bumpers. We really decreased the payload of our Cummins, actually.
Yeah, and then the question might be, how does the manufacturer determine the payload? And, you know, for a layman like me, I would think it's like, how strong is a frame? But that's only one component of it. It's not about how big the frame is. It's about every component in the truck, because the heavier you get, by the way, that sled we were pulling is 33,000 pounds, and the payload on the Cybertruck may be 2,500, but it's only rated to tow 11,000 pounds. So we tripled the amount of weight we were supposed to be pulling.
Yeah. The truck survived, by the way.
It did. It did really well.
We did survive.
But payload is not just like, you know, how beefy of a frame. Is it channeled, right? How big are your brakes?
Because tires handle it?
Yeah. Can you stop the load?
Yeah.
You know, can your drive shaft handle it? Can your transfer case handle it? You know, can your transmission handle it? It's also based on, can you know your engine cool off enough? Because that's usually the limiter when it comes to how much a vehicle can tow, because the engine tends to overheat. Now, that's probably not an issue in the Cybertruck. It probably has more to do with the batteries overheating. But in a traditional internal combustion engine vehicle, it's about, can you keep the engine cool enough? Because when you start towing up a hill or in hot weather, you are going to increase the temperature of the engine and the transmission.
And also, I did monitor the temperature of the motors, dual motor Cybertruck, and the battery. And it didn't really, after one sled pull, which is about, 300 feet at most, the temperatures never budged. So that wasn't enough stress to really stress down the system. Actually, I saw the temperatures move on the battery when you're charging. That's really important, right? The temperature of the battery and how it warms up while you're charging.
Well, let's keep talking about the Cybertruck, because we did a video this week, which you haven't published yet. Probably you'll be time traveling because we're recording this probably before we publish the video, but when we actually publish this, it'll be after we publish the video. But we did a video where we towed a 3,000-pound scissor lift on a 3,000-pound trailer. This was for Tommy's big wedding party at the ranch. Alan from Denver East Machinery.
Yeah.
Lent us.
Thank you, Alan. Amazing.
The scissor lift and the trailer. Maybe the trailer was heavier because it was a beefy trailer.
It was a pretty massive. I saw the trailer. It's pretty massive.
Massive. And so we picked it up, the trailer and the scissor lift, and towed it to the ranch with the Cybertruck. And then we towed back with the new Ram 1500 that we have here at the office. And you want to talk about what that was like and the differences between pulling with a Cybertruck, actually towing with a Cybertruck, or trailering, as GM likes to say, versus with a traditional Ram 1500. And I'll give you a hint. The original video was going to be called The Cybertruck is the Best Car We've Ever Bought, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it does things really well.
But yeah.
We thought it was very hard for people to understand that concept in a thumbnail. And so what was your experience like towing with a Cybertruck versus towing with a Ram 1500, which, you know, sort of kind of competes?
Well, I wish I could tell you, but I did not experience it.
But you've towed with a Cybertruck before, yeah.
So Tommy was the main presenter there. But I've towed with both.
Yes.
And the thing about the Cybertruck, let me go back to the picture of a Cybertruck, is that I think Tesla did a great job with the suspension. It's comfortable when you have no weight in it, and it's also comfortable when you're loading it near the max. It's air suspension. It's height adjustable and also self-leveling. Even though it wasn't able to adjust to the sled quite as quickly as we needed it to be, because we're really overloading it and really using it beyond its capacity. But it's comfy while towing. So remember we did Cummins versus Cybertruck Bucky's run,
right? Yes.
I was driving the Cybertruck, you were in the Cummins, and I talked about this. First of all, I don't like the visibility.
Those mirrors are awful at towing.
Out of the Cybertruck.
Oh, my God.
They're little triangles. And yes, I have cameras, so the cameras help a little bit, but cameras always flatten the images, right? So it's hard to know exact distance within the cameras.
And then some of the cameras are useless. Like, you can do the front-facing camera and the rear-facing camera. So the rear-facing camera is good for towing because it kind of shows you what the load is, but it's pretty low. It's in the tailgate.
And it only shows you, like, the tongue of the trailer.
And then what they forgot to do or didn't do is they didn't give you that little center line when you're in reverse to show you where your hitch is.
So backing up.
While they're back, yeah. So that you can back it up to a trailer. And then the other thing they didn't do, which is also horrible, not horrible, but it's not good, it's like they don't necessarily have a lot of towing experiences. They put that hitch way underneath the truck.
And covered it with plastic.
And covered it with plastic. So you got to uncover it, like you're in, let's say like you're in a Land Cruiser, which does the same thing, but that's a pain. And then it's so far recessed that it's hard to like not only find the hitch, but find the plug, and then you're on the ground digging around, you know, on a dirty ground,
yeah,
trying to plug in, you know, the receiver and then plug in the cord.
Yeah. So that's, yeah, I don't know why the rear bumper cover has to be that protruding, you know, right. It's really sticks out there.
And then you have these cameras on the side, which are basically in the wheel wells in the front, which are absolutely useless. So they show you kind of the side of the truck, but they don't show you anything that's behind the truck. And then to make matters worse, the rear view mirrors are triangles, so they don't work. And then if you have the tonneau cover closed,
you have no visibility.
You have, because all you have is that little tiny camera that shows up in the screen, but that doesn't give you anything. So basically, you can't see what is behind
you. And that is my excuse for not doing well in the sled pull, Roman.
Yes.
I was trying to look at the sled, and the tonneau cover is broken. It's not moving. Yeah. I couldn't move it.
Yeah.
So.
And then you might be wondering, well, why is that a problem? Well, if you're trying to make a turn and you're trying to see like where the mailbox is or where the, you know, the stop sign is, you can't really see it because you have no visibility out the back.
So you're basically acting on practice, you on your experience.
It does make the four-wheel steering does make for a little bit easier backing up because you can
and moving around, yeah,
a little bit more. But then what Tommy did was he actually jackknifed it and then dented the bumper because you're steering so much that it's easy to jackknife the truck into the trailer where the rear bumper hits the trailer and then, you know, crunches it.
By the way, I was looking at the trailer that we borrowed.
Yeah.
It does have a slightly beefier frame in the front.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of helped. I mean, not helped.
Hurt the truck.
It hurt the truck.
Helped the trailer.
It helped the trailer. It protected the trailer, but it wasn't easy to drive. You know, I want to tell you another small story recently. I went to the lake with my family.
Yes.
And I had my daughter, who has been driving for 6 months. She's 16 and a half. I had her tow the trailer.
Oh.
She was driving.
Congratulations.
For the very first time. She was very interested in towing. She's like, I want to be in the future, be able to go to the lake. And I'm like, okay, well, you better start now because, you know, you need to know how to hook up the trailer and how to tow. She did really well, but I've learned something. I was next to her the entire time, right? We were going down the hill from Carter Lake, right? And it's steep. And we're using the tow haul mode. This is my Chevy Colorado Trail Boss. And I said, the truck will help you. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, the truck will downshift and help you slow down on the downhill. And all of a sudden, 30 seconds later, indeed, it downshifted and it went from 2,000 RPM to 4,000 RPM. And my daughter kind of jumped in her seat. She was driving. And she's like, oh my gosh, what is it doing? And I said, it's helping you. But she equated high RPM with acceleration.
Mm.
You know, she didn't quite grasp the fact that it downshifted, but it wasn't accelerating. It was actually trying to slow down. So I'm like, okay, so if you've never experienced that, and if you've never driven a manual transmission to know what happens when you shift gears, she hasn't driven a manual transmission. It can be a little startling the first time.
Yeah, no, that was an interesting lesson that she learned.
So maybe I need to adjust how I review vehicles right? Because if there are other new people to towing, we need to talk about some of those things.
You know, we've done those videos in the past where we try to, like, you know, top 10 mistakes that beginners make. And the problem is that beginners don't tend to tow, and they don't tend to be beginners.
Or tend to watch.
So if it's your first time towing, you tend to do it, and then it's hard because it's scary, like trying to pull into a gas station. And either you stay doing it, and then you get good at it, or like you're moving, and then you'll say, that's the last time I'm doing that. But let's keep going about the differences between like a half ton and the Cybertruck, which is basically a half ton truck. So the two good parts about it are acceleration. And
Huge amount.
So if you're trying to merge onto a highway, that thing will just rock it. And then, of course, regenerative braking, which is what you were just talking about.
You're saving energy.
Yeah, it doesn't have to grade shift. It just
uses electric motors to put energy back
And that works really well. So it almost makes like going down the backside of the Eisenhower, the Ike Gauntlet, super easy because the thing is just braking.
And recouping energy at the same time.
Recouping energy. It's wonderful. But it also does something else, which is
distance.
Range is not good.
Is a problem.
Figure 90 miles.
We went 85 miles in our test with a camping trailer.
We only went to 5%, so I've added 5 more miles.
Yeah. So you could go about 90. Yeah. But Roman, we had to unhook the trailer to charge.
Which is not
because good. Not 95% of chargers, fast chargers, or maybe more, don't have pull through areas where you could have a trailer.
So, and the other thing it does at towing, which isn't good, is it like, and Tommy thought this was because it's unibody, but it does squeak a lot and it does transmit all of the kind of noise, vibration,
kind
and
of
harshness
yeah.
from the trailer into the truck.
I've noticed that. And also vehicles like the Durango, for example, Dodge Durango can tow a lot, but it's also unibody. And a similar thing happens where you can kind of hear the hitch and you can kind of feel some of that. You won't hear that in a traditional pickup like a Ram 1500 Hurricane, because your frame is separated from your body and the body is mounted on these bushings, right? On these kind of rubber bushings usually, where you kind of insulate it from the frame.
Yeah, so my bottom line, having towed with, you know, both the Ram and the Cybertruck, is it's just much more tiring and to some extent stressful towing with the Cybertruck, even if you're going around town, than it is towing with a regular or a traditional half ton, 1500 or, you know, 2500. So like our Ram 2500 makes towing a breeze. Like it doesn't
actually
cruise back there.
Yeah.
It just doesn't care. The diesel Cummins is just built for that kind of that low end torque. But the Hurricane isn't bad. It's just like you get the trailer behind you and get on the highway and you're like, this feels comfortable. You know, I'm really kind of liking life. With the Cybertruck, you have really bad sight lines out the front.
You have tunnel vision, kind of.
You have bad sight lines out the back. It's creaking. You're looking at the power going down, basically 1% per mile. So, you know, with a EPA range of supposedly 320 miles, maybe you could tow 150 with that 6,000-pound load, maybe.
Yeah, it depends on the trailer.
Yeah, and then, of course, you have to completely recharge it from empty.
Six times.
So it's a really good car. Not so good truck for at least the trucky things that trucks do. Having said that, the bed is really useful when your tonneau cover works, like ours does not. If it were to work, I would be really happy with it because I went to pick up my friend Steve, who came in for Tommy's big shindig, and I love the fact that I could just stuff his stuff.
All of his bags. Bag. Yeah.
But then I was so happy about it because, you know, it kind of sort of works, so you can kind of coax it. And then there's this like little thing that it does where the tonneau cover closes, and it's supposed to be pretty waterproof. I'm not saying it's watertight, but water resistant.
Yeah.
But then if it closes too fast, it bounces back and kind of opens. And
there's a slit.
Yeah.
There's a gap.
So I loaded their stuff in the back, and I thought, this is great. And then, you know, unbeknownst to me, it bounced back like maybe 6 inches, and then it like started to pour like you wouldn't believe it. And then, of course, all the luggage got wet. And I was so happy about the fact that now I had this like place I could put luggage, because in a traditional pickup truck, you don't have a lot of... I guess I could have put it in the frunk,
But it's limited space.
It's limited space, and I was at the airport picking up... You know,
it was two
is.
People. I mean, two people worth of luggage.
Worth of luggage, and then there was, you know, you pull up at the arrivals, and then there's all kinds of cars, and you don't want to, like, you know, dick around too much. You just want to get out of there. And then, of course, it started raining. And so even that was kind of disappointing. I'm sure Tesla will sort that out. But, you know.
Well, we have an appointment. We have a service appointment.
How long? How long from now?
3 weeks.
Ugh.
But, you know, I was thinking how 3 weeks sucks.
Yeah.
But then I remembered I was waiting 4 weeks to fix my Chevy Colorado, too.
How long were you waiting to fix your Chevy Colorado camera?
5 months.
Yeah. So I don't want to be like just, you know.
So
down
it's
on
not
Tesla.
A Tesla thing. I think it's an industry thing.
Yeah.
And another email we recently got here is that one of our viewers got into an accident with his previous generation Tacoma, and they told him to wait 3 or 4 months for the new bed to show up. And he was dumbfounded. He's like, isn't this the most popular midsize truck in the country? Why do I have to wait four months to get a new bed?
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm sorry. I don't know enough about, you know, parts for Tacomas.
I think people pick on the Tesla Cybertruck because it's new and it's an easy pincushion, right? But if you look at it logically, it's happening across the industry. Same thing with Toyota and all their recalls. Once again, I'm not being an apologist. I'm just saying.
Well,
this is happening in the entire industry, Tacoma or Tundra. And then there's no Tacoma right now recall, so I want to be very clear about that on the transmission.
Well,
but there
Alex
is a Tundra recall.
Our Cummins, we've had it for 2 years.
Yeah.
And the reason why we kept it longer than some trucks is because we use it at the ranch. Right?
Yes, yep.
For work. I think we've had like 8 recalls on our Cummins. Not all powertrain related. I mean, there's different things.
Yeah.
But every vehicle has recalls.
Yeah, I think at this point, the time when it gets ugly is when you have a stop sale. Right. When they issue a stop sale, and Chevy did it with the Bolt. There's a big one right now. I forget what it was on. But it's gotten to be so commonplace that it even like washes over me anymore, because like you can't like get any news without some manufacturer doing a recall nowadays.
I think it's significant as soon as you have like
a stop sale.
Stop sale or multiple thousands of vehicles. So like 5,000 for a small issue like a wiper misaligned, I usually won't report that. But as soon as you have like 100,000 potential engine problem, I think it elevates that, you know, to really important level.
All right. Well, let's wrap this up. We're running out of time. But you are heading off to Germany today. What are you doing in Germany?
A long trip.
It is a long trip.
Gonna get some Wiener Schnitzel. Yeah.
Strudel.
There's only one place to do that, and that's. That's Frankfurt.
Yes.
There's a technology day with ZF or ZF. So I was actually talking to one of my neighbors, and I said, I'm going to Germany soon for a ZF technology day. And he's like, what is ZF?
Yeah,
a lot of people don't understand.
They don't know what the parts manufacture.
A lot of your vehicle parts on most of your vehicles are actually produced by suppliers.
Unless it's a Tesla. Tesla does mainly their own parts.
But did you know that the four-wheel steering, who does that? ZF?
Does it?
ZF does four-wheel steering.
You know who's supposedly really like vertically integrated to the extent that they actually own their own boats where they ship their cars? I want to say BYD. BYD is so vertically integrated that they do everything, including own the boats that they then ship the cars.
Isn't like Hyundai similar to that? Because Hyundai is a giant conglomerate of...
Shipping companies,
et cetera.
Those are like, there's like a half a dozen of these giant companies in Korea, right? Motorola is another one where, is it Motorola?
Or Yamaha, no.
No, not Motorola. It's LG, sorry. LG, yeah. LG is another one like that where they own like the bank, right?
They finance the
steel yard. You know, the refrigerator, the washing machine, pretty much everything that, you know, that you need, it's all vertically integrated.
I'm impressed. I was talking to somebody at Ford, and they said, they talked about raw steel prices, and I'm like, kind of makes sense. But they actually get raw steel, and they stamp their own frames and other stuff by themselves.
Ford?
Oh. For their trucks.
Well, I'm
sure. So it's not like your frame is manufactured by somebody else. They actually do everything.
Well, all those guys back in the day, like let's bring this full circle to the Model A, right? Henry Ford knew all of the, you know, Firestone, right? They were buddies. They would go on these camping trips.
Edison,
right? Yeah. These were all the people who basically
hung out together,
and then, you know, sold them tires and sold them the steel.
Rockefeller, Carnegie,
right? These guys all knew each other. In fact, I think Rockefeller bought Carnegie out at the end of his career. And so, you know, it's not that different in Korea.
JP Morgan would visit once
in a while. JP Morgan bought out the steel manufacturer.
Which is Carnegie?
Carnegie, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, Carnegie Steel. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Who then became famous for starting libraries.
So, yeah. So, like, older legacy manufacturers, you know, are usually very deeply integrated, right?
Yeah.
And then also, you know what's happening with Rivian? Rivian started to design and produce their own motors, right? They used to buy the electric motors from suppliers similar to ZF. But there's also other like Magna, like Bosch. You know, there's many huge companies that many people don't know, but actually produce many parts. In fact, rear steering on the Cybertruck is ZF.
So we're recording this on Tuesday. You're flying to Germany today.
Yes.
And then this will publish as a video
on Friday.
Friday when you'll be flying back.
Yes.
There you go.
Thank you.
And Saturday,
and so
as an audio podcast. So Andrew will be back and be publishing stories when you guys are listening to this.
Yeah. So can I just finish the half-ton topic?
Yes, please. Let's finish it up.
So that 1931 Model A is a half-ton. Now your F-150 is also a half-ton. It's called a half-ton, but it has more payload than that, right? So I think...
Wait. Okay.
What?
All right. So Jeep Gladiator diesel, that's called a quarter ton?
No, it's called midsize.
Yeah, but there's no quarter ton?
So why midsize? You might ask
me,
what is midsize?
Yeah, where did that come from?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's smaller than the half ton.
So midsize trucks now are as big as like half ton trucks were 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And now we have this new category of trucks, which used to be, and then it went away, compact trucks, like the Maverick is a compact truck.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the Tesla Cybertruck seems to be
In between.
Yeah, it's 17 feet long, right? So it's like full size, but it's got the payload
of a heavy duty.
Of a heavy duty.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
So, and Rivian is a little bit bigger than the Tacoma.
It's like a tweener.
Yeah. But has a capability of an F-150.
Yeah.
So the world is changing, and I think...
You know, I can get the Cybertruck in my garage, but...
With a quarter inch on each side.
Yeah, yeah. I have a little like shelving unit in my garage, which is probably, you know, what, 10 inches. And so it hits that, and then I can get it in, and I was hitting it, and I'm like, this can't be good. So I put a blanket over the shelving unit, so I hit the blanket. But yeah, it just barely fits.
So I don't know, should we continue using those terms? One ton, half ton, three quarter ton?
I mean,
it's something that we've used over the years and decades, but it has less meaning as we move on. You see what I'm saying?
You want to come up with our own set of like TFL, like Falcon class,
but
like name it after birds of prey.
Maybe. But you know, thinking. I love our supporters on Patreon.
That's an Eagle class. That's big.
We rate them midsize, full size, or heavy duty supporters.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, let's keep using it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Heavy duty.
We don't have compact supporters, do we? Would it be like a dollar a month if you're compact? Is that what that is?
I don't know if anybody wants to be a compact supporter.
Compact supporter.
All right.
Guys, thank you for watching.
You.
Andre, have a safe trip and bring back all the news that's worthy.
I'll bring you some pretzels.
Yes.
And
then if you guys want to check out our shirts,
TFLstuff.com.
Or usually there's a link in the video below and you can go and just buy it right there. And we shall see you next week. Thanks for watching. And remember, if you want to see more, alltfl.com.
Thank you.
Ciao.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.